This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
If you're not listening to us, I hope you're at least tuned into the Ole Miss North Carolina game. It is getting tight down the stretch here. A minute left in the game, and Ole Miss just leading this one by three over the Tar Heels. Some sloppy play here down the stretch.
Yeah, it's college, man. That's part of the reason I like college. College is fun because like they're not good free throw shooters. Like they're not good. You know, they make mistakes. It's sloppy. It's, you know, kids get nervous. You know, this setting is so crazy. But that's why it's weird, because this is one of the last years we're going to deal with it to this extent of like RJ Davis. I feel like he's been in college basketball since, you know, like three presidents ago. Like, like what is happening? How is it possible that he is still here? It's kind of crazy. They're looking at it because he elbowed a guy in the face by accident, you know, so we'll see. But I don't know. Like these are my two favorite days of the year. And then like Saturday, Sunday is fun too. Like the round of 32 is fun.
But it's not as hectic and crazy,
right? It's not anywhere near as hectic. Plus the games are, you know, the you don't have like the 13-4,
right,
or the 15-2, where, you know, if it's a close game in the second half, the SEC team or like the blue blood team is just like, oh no, this will be the most embarrassing thing ever. You know, Virginia losing to UMBC, or I can't remember who beat Purdue. Purdue also lost Fairleigh Dickinson, thanks Charlie, in the 16-1 matchup. Like that's just you cannot find that anywhere else. Like an 8 seed beating a 1 seed in the NBA playoffs would not feel that way.
Right.
Or in any other sport. But you have, you know, I guess like a Stony Brook beating LSU, maybe we could give it that.
That was monumental for sure.
Yeah, but even then it was like, okay, you know, Coastal Carolina, but they won the whole thing. Anyway, it's just a spectacle. It's like the best thing we have as a country to offer to the world, in my opinion.
Jeff, the only other game going on in action right now, at least, is the Maryland Grand Canyon game. That one's not close at all. 51-36, the Terps up on top big time.
Crab five. Man, which is, I heard, wasn't Jawan Howard? Oh, Jalen Rose. They were talking to Jalen Rose about it. And he said that at the time, they wanted their nickname, the Fab Five. That's what they're playing off of, the Fab Five. They wanted their nickname to be five times. And he was like, well, I'm glad they didn't listen to us, because that'd be a terrible nickname. And the Fab Five is a fantastic nickname. It's endured to the point that Maryland is coming up with jokes about it. Wow, Big Three by Ole Miss. But yeah, this is my favorite time of year.
What's crazy is I've got the scoreboard on the computer that updated quicker than on my phone. I've got the YouTube TV going on, and I saw that it was 69-64 before that bucket dropped on the TV feed.
Yeah, I can't do
or
that.
Or the YouTube feed, whatever you want to call it.
I have to keep it in one spot. Otherwise, I'll just go crazy going back and forth, back and forth. I don't like getting spoiled for me. I like to watch it with my eyeballs.
Coming up soon in the NCAA tournament, we've got Florida taking on Norfolk State, and you look at that matchup, Jeff. The Gators, a 28.5-point favorite.
That's actually not that, you know, well, I mean, you look at some of these, I think Alabama was something in the 20s over, who'd they play? Bobby Morris out there.
Bobby.
You know? They kept it pretty close. Robert Morris was winning that game with about 5 minutes to go. And I was vindicated because in the first half, I was like, Robert Morris could win this game. Like, they are playing in such a way and they have the size.
So Bama did not cover.
They did not even close. Houston, you know, and that's one of the things I do, like when I say I'm an SEC hater and I've been really critical of the way the SEC teams have played, because I don't look at a single one of their games, like even the games they won, and said like, yeah, that looks like a championship caliber team. Like Auburn won by 20. They were getting pushed in the first half by Alabama State. It was like a 3-point game at halftime. Alabama is getting pushed by Robert Morris, by Bob Morris out there, right? Tennessee, you know, they kind of took that game in the end. I'll give them some credit. I think they looked good against Wofford. But even Wofford gave him a run for their money, right? Ole Miss is getting pushed by North Carolina right now, a team that a lot of people think shouldn't be in the tournament at all, right? Missouri got beaten up by Drake. You know, they kept it close, but, you know, they were down double digits a lot of that game. Georgia got demolished by Gonzaga. And so, like, it's not even, oh, well, okay, they're about 500 in the tournament. Even the teams that should win games, they're winning games in ways that are ugly, right? Like, go look at how Duke took care of Mount St. Mary's. That's how a championship caliber one seed is supposed to look against the 16. Auburn looked like a team that's like, okay, they might lose to Creighton tomorrow. Right. So I don't know, like all year we've talked about the SEC and we've hyped it up to the point that, like, if you're getting blown out on the 8-9 line, it means that you were not on the right line. It means that, yeah, Georgia probably is a 13 seed, or more likely they should have been in the NIT. But because no one separated themselves in the SEC, they all got in. And I just think the NCAA needs to rethink how they do that, because you're seeing in real time how this works and how it looks when you artificially inflate these seeds for a conference and then bump teams that should be on the 4-5 line down to the 8-9. Anyway, it's a whole thing.
Talking about McNeese State yesterday, obviously a huge upset for them.
Go Pokes.
Congratulations to Will Wade and the squad over there. And we talked about a little bit with Rohit at 4:35, the fact that he's been pretty open and honest with his players, letting them exactly know what's going on, not trying to keep anything secret or in the dark about him leaving for NC State.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the right way to do it.
Right.
Like, we all know what this is. You know, this is it was kind of a rehab project for Will Wade in getting back into the coaching ranks. You know, he had to kind of take the hits. And I think McNeese is like, sure, you know, we are relevant right now in a way that we have never been relevant.
Back-to-back years in the tourney and their first tournament win yesterday.
Right. And they just, to Clemson, I don't know what was going on in the first half of Clemson. They scored 13 points in the first half of that game. They scored 50-something in the second half. Like, 13 points in the first half of a college game, that's unfathomable, like how badly they were playing. So, I don't know. I think Clemson helped them out a little bit. But I don't know. McNeese looked good, and they looked like a team that's on the rise. You know, and it was always going to be kind of a stepping stone job for Will Wade, right? And, you know, I just think it's like the fact that LSU has not even sniffed a tournament since Will Wade left. And I get it. There were sanctions. There were whatever. If you had kept Will Wade and said, hey, dig yourself out of this hole that you've created,
you feel like they'd be in a better spot.
They
right
would
now.
Be relevant right now. Would they be great? Would they be a Final Four team? I don't know. Probably not, because the sanctions would have made things difficult, just like it's made things difficult for Matt McMahon. But I there's no way they would be what they are right now, which is irrelevant. They're the only team in that conference, other than, I guess, South Carolina and LSU, the only teams in that conference. 14 teams made the tournament, and we all agree that LSU is relevant in that conversation, because they are, and they've been irrelevant for years. So I don't know. I just think it's a shame what happened, especially when you consider that now all the players are getting paid. And we're all kind of like, yeah, it was going on forever, but we're just pretending it didn't happen. And now, you know, you have a program that's not even worth watching.
I'm really jealous of McNeese State's their student manager on the team, the guy that comes out with the big boom box for them with the music playing. The kid's the first now ever, Amir Khan is his name, first ever college student manager to ink an NIL deal.
Good for him.
Yeah, congrats to him. I know one of them was Buffalo Wild Wings, and I think some other was a cookie company. Mm. But nice to student manager for the squad, getting some good bucks. And I'm sure the school's not paying him much, if anything.
Yeah, probably not. Let's go sports bar.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some talk about the NFL draft. It's coming around the corner, just 34 days away and counting now. Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media, will join us right here on WWL. If you have any questions, give us a shout. Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Coming back with more right after this on WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk, keeping up with the NCAA tournament. Now switching gears a little bit, talking some NFL draft with Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media. Just 34 days away till we get round one in Green Bay this year. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hanging in there. We've just been, you know, trying to keep an eye on the NCAA tournament as we're doing a radio show, which has been a little bit difficult, but happy to be getting into some football talk right now as well. Just overall, some of your impressions from what we've seen in free agency, some of the storylines going on there, and I know an interesting one today when we saw Aaron Rodgers finally having that visit with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still kind of waiting for a few dominoes to fall, but I really wonder how impactful all these moves will end up being. What I think, you know, what Rodgers and then maybe Russell Wilson and, you know, a few other dominoes may determine is how the top of the draft looks. So that obviously, you know, pertains to Saints fans and kind of sitting back there at number nine and waiting to see because, you know, the offseason's been a bit of a bust so far, I think. I don't know about you guys, but you know, a lot of people not only re-signing their free agents, but also taking care of their future free agents, you know, making sure they hit the cap floor and, you know, signing their young guys to extensions, things like that. The Myles Garrett trade never materialized. He's staying put. You know, we did have a DK Metcalf trade, a couple other interesting moves. But, you know, there wasn't this massive crop of free agents just ready to, you know, land elsewhere. So I guess it's about what we should have expected. But, yeah, it's been a little bit tame so far.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned all the extensions. The Saints had a couple of extensions with, you know, Chase Young and Juwan Johnson. But, you know, the two that are really kind of fascinating to me is, you know, the Bengals extending both of their wide receivers on big money contracts. And you now have this trio of Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins taking up, I don't even know what percent of the salary cap it is, but it's got to be a pretty good chunk. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that? Because it just seems like, I don't know how you could possibly pay that much to three skill players and build an offensive line or a defensive line capable of doing much. Like, unless you're talking about, hey, I'm going to draft Joe Burrow in fantasy next year, which I definitely am. You know, it feels like a pretty crazy way to build a team.
Yeah, and you know, the latest buzz is that they've set such a high price tag on former Saint Trey Hendrickson that you know, the message that other teams are getting is that they want to keep him. You know, it sounds like the Bengals want to find a way to, and again, by extending these guys, obviously you can kind of manipulate the salaries a little, you know, in a little bit of a way where you balance it out, right? Not all the money's all in 1 year, or you can have extra years added to kind of, spread out the cap hits a little bit. But yeah, I mean, they're trying to make this thing work, and you saw, I guess, ironically, the team that beat them in the Super Bowl, Los Angeles Rams, rather. That was a team that was very top heavy in the salary cap and had a F them picks approach. Remember that? You know, they wanted the star players and they wanted the top heavy roster, and it worked in the short term. So, I guess for Bengals fans, you know, you look at it like, well, we've been toiling for years in a team that wasn't competitive. So I guess the go for it mentality is at least commendable in some ways, even if it is going to be a very delicate balancing act trying to make it all work.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the Bengals are kind of in a similar position to where the Saints were in 2019, where it was like, okay, we kind of went all in to win a title with Breeze, and obviously Joe Burrow's a lot younger, but you know, once you get to that point, it's like you can't, it's hard to dial it back. Like, how do you dial it back? It's like, we still got to go try to win. But like, the Rams were able to do that because they won, right? Because they have the Super Bowl, and then they can be like, oh, okay, well, the fans are happy, they'll accept a rebuild. I don't think Bengals fans are that way because they don't have the Super Bowl to brag about. And it does feel interesting, because when you look at the Saints, they are kind of down that path of, okay, now we're trying to unwind it because yep, we've now gotten past it. But I feel like the Bengals are kind of early in that road of 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about them similar to how we're talking about the Saints right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think what ultimately justifies it is if they do go win a Super Bowl, and then you can say, all right, you know, the bet worked. I mean, it's a little like throwing all your chips in the middle and playing it on one or two hands, right? And that's, I guess that's how you have to think of it. And we'll find out in 3-4 years whether it works or not.
Looking at one of the mock drafts from a big national guy in Mel Kiper Jr. that recently came out, kind of caused a lot of shockwaves over here with the 9th overall selection. He had Jackson Dart getting picked by the Saints. And I know it seems way too high. I'm not even sold on Dart being a first round pick, but I do get it in this day and age of, you know, how valuable quarterbacks are to teams. Just curious where you see Dart fitting in this draft process and where he could end up.
Somewhere between number 7 with the Jets and number 21 with the Steelers. Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong. I think that's, and we remember a couple years ago, we kind of sort of fed into this idea that, hey, you might get Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis and possibly who was the third quarterback in that? Ritter. There was actually talk about that where, hey, we could get 3 picks in the first round at quarterback. That ended up being a 1 quarterback first round. We waited like 50 selections. So, you know, there's no guarantee, but I've heard some buzz on him. And I'll be honest, like, I didn't think Dart had an amazing Senior Bowl week or anything, or separated himself. He was still kind of getting used to working from under center, and of course new receivers and all that. But you know, I'll tell you what, like, I even thought Michael Penix showed out better in the same sample size the year before. Bo Nix too, you know. Neither were special, but you just saw enough sort of professionalism about them that I didn't necessarily, I don't mean to say he's not a professional, that's a poor way of phrasing it, but just the way they kind of operated and everything, and there were enough missed throws and stuff, and of course his tape is good, but when you're looking at a Lane Kiffin offense, you're also saying, oh, a lot of quarterbacks could make some of these throws because they're schemed open so well. So yeah, I don't know about the Saints fit. I truly don't. I can't speak on that. Obviously, having drafted quarterbacks in the fourth and fifth rounds the last 2 years, you know, you'd love it if one of them could stick and one of them could be a hit there. So you know, that I don't know what the new staff thinks about them. I don't know what they're thinking short or long term, but I do know there are teams in that range who, depending on where Shadur goes and how the quarterbacks come off the board, you know, Dark could be the second or third guy.
Yeah, it is interesting because I feel like there's a point where, okay, all the teams that need a quarterback pass on a guy, and then you kind of get into this cycle of like, oh, they didn't take him with their first pick. Why would they take him with their second pick? Because right. Like I've always been of the belief that like if you think, hey, this quarterback is the guy, then there's no point where it's too early to take him, because if you do believe that he is that guy, then you need to go get him, right? And it's kind of where the Giants taking Daniel Jones, it was like they believed he was the guy. He wasn't the guy, but they believed it. So you can go get him at number six. Now, when you do that and it doesn't work out, then you look terrible because the options you had available at number six were so, you know, elite that you passed on to get a quarterback that sets you back so far. And I agree. I don't know if Jackson is that guy. And you know, the other guy is Shadur Sanders. He seems like Shadur, for whatever reason, has been falling down draft boards, or at least mock draft boards. I don't know about NFL teams, but you see, you know, if you go onto all these mock draft sites, right, he's now available in the second round of a lot of these mocks. And I'm just curious, why would you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to come down to what happens at quarterback with the Giants and Browns the next couple weeks. I think that's a big part of it. And you make a great point. Like, if that's your guy, you have conviction on him, don't risk losing him, right? If you have a little bit more of if you're the Jets, for instance, and you have Justin Fields and you say, yes, we like Jackson Dart, or yes, we like Shadur or whoever, you know, we'll take him if he's there, but we're not going to go up for him. We're not going to, you know, go out of our way to get him. And if he's gone, another player gets pushed down to us. I think there may be one or two teams that fit into that category. But, yeah, I don't know. With Shadur specifically, look, I don't think he's going to be a perfect fit for every team. One of it is for physical reasons. I don't, you know, he doesn't have an amazing arm. He doesn't have plus athleticism. It's crazy to think that the son of Deion Sanders is, by NFL standards, I would say, an average athlete size-wise. You know, he's taken a beating, too, the last 2 years, a ton of sacks, especially 2 years ago, had some injuries. So there's little reasons like that. And then you can decide whether teams are comfortable with the Deion, Shadur, Shiloh. You know, you get the whole Sanders clan with them. Some teams may embrace that. Others may shy away from it. So with quarterbacks, it's a little different, obviously, because not every team needs one. So there are gaps. You know, if a guy doesn't go in the top three, maybe he falls a little bit. That happened with Brady Quinn years ago. I mean, he was, you know, the Browns got cute. They got him again, and then he ended up stinking. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't say for sure he's going to be the second quarterback off the board. But if the Giants go into the draft without anybody, you know, I mean, they have Tommy DeVito right now, and that ain't going to do it. I mean, I don't know. I just think that that's going to determine a lot of where he ends up going.
Eric, today the Saints, you know, making another move at wide receiver, adding Brandon Cooks to the room. Still, though, what's lacking on this squad is that big-bodied, physical guy. I'm hoping to pick number 9, Arizona wide receiver Tet McMillan is still available. Just wondering, what do you think about the prospect? And is there a chance? Because I've done a ton of mock drafts already. Sometimes he's available for me, other times not. But where do you think Tet McMillan fits in this draft board?
I think he'll be there. I think he will. I don't think there's any receiver in this class, and that includes Matthew Golden, who ran a terrific 40 time at the combine. I just don't think there's any receiver in this draft that teams are enamored with, like in that Jamar Chase kind of elite, you know, even Marvin Harrison last year, you know, other guys in that category. I don't think anyone's in that category. I think Tet McMillan profiles, I've heard a lot of people say he's that kind of, you know, Drake London-y kind of player. And I think that's probably right. London's been a little bit better than I thought he would. I had him as a, you know, my 8th or 9th overall prospect whenever he came out, 10th, I don't remember, somewhere at the back end of the top 10. And I have Ted just a little below that in a weaker draft than London was in. I don't think he's quite as, I haven't seen him take over games. Then again, he had great tape against Travis Hunter. I mean, he had a nice 40 time for his size the other day, you know, low 4.5s. I thought anything under 4.6 would be good for him. But I kind of see him, you know, would he be a top 10 pick in a normal year, in a year where there's a standard allotment of kind of blue chip prospects at the top? I don't think so. He has a chance this year because of that. So I would say that the Saints are one of the first few teams that I would feel. I guess you would say New England at 4, and they're trade-down candidates, so keep an eye on them.
Right.
But there aren't too many teams ahead of them that I'm immediately going, oh, yeah, that's your Tet McMillan team. So I think they have a shot at him if they like at him.
Definitely appreciate your time, Eric. Thanks so much for joining on this fabulous Friday.
All right, have a great weekend, you guys. See ya.
Thank you. Thanks, Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media, joining us right there. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we're going to talk to Brad Sham, voice of the Dallas Cowboys, get a little bit more info on Brandon Cook, see if he thinks the wide receiver's got anything left in the tank to come to New Orleans. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned on WWL Saints Radio. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak. We've been talking a little about the NFL draft. Now getting into some of the Saints free agent move here. Bringing in Brandon Cooks today was the big news to help us break some of that down. Brad Sham, voice of the Dallas Cowboys, where Brandon Cooks was the last couple seasons. Brad, how you doing today, man? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. Thanks very much for asking me.
Looking at Cooks coming to this back to the Saints after being a first-round draft pick here eons ago, 2014. Just curious, the last two seasons in Dallas, how things went. I know the first year put up some good production, and then last season dealt with some injury issues.
Yeah, and I don't think that they – I think he would tell you this, but I'm not convinced that they really knew – exactly how they wanted to use him. 2 years ago, Mike McCarthy took over the play calling and virtually, in his telling, installed a new offense. He kept saying, we're in the first year of this offense, even though he'd been, you know, the head coach for the whole previous time, including when your head coach, Kellen Moore, was the offensive coordinator. And please give Kellen my best. Tell him I said hello.
Will do.
So they stumbled out of the block offensively that first year. And they had a winning record at the bye. But everyone was complaining. They were scoring a lot of points on defense, and their defense was kind of carrying them. And C.D. Lamb complained a little bit about how things were going. So I don't know what happened during the bye in 2023, but they changed something. And one of the things about that first period was it was kind of like they forgot they had signed him, Brandon Cooks. It was like he was a complete afterthought, which none of us understood. And after that break, he became much more involved, and he was a really productive part of their playoff team in 2023. And not only was he, I'm saying all this to heartily endorse the Saints bringing him back at this stage of his career, not only did he have a productive year on the field, the young players, younger than him was almost all of the receivers, and that would include Lamb, they swore by the guy and talked about what a great mentor he was for all of the young receivers, from everything to the way he ran routes and approached things to the way he lived his life, from, you know, his role of spirituality in his life. And so he was really a leader and an important part of what they did, and I thought they didn't get nearly what they could out of him. And last year, as you said, he had some injuries. And then after, you know, their offensive line was really in question all year because of the inexperience they were playing. And then once Prescott got hurt, then for the receivers, it's almost impossible to make a value judgment because the whole offense changes when you're on your second quarterback, even though Cooper Rush had played a good bit. It's just not the same. So I think that Cooks, I'd have been very pleased if the Cowboys wanted to re-sign him. I think that they did not get the most out of what he had to offer in the 2 years he had here. And I don't know that he's your lead receiver at this stage of his career, but with Kellen, I think he can be very, very productive for the Saints.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I think people ask, okay, he's 31 years old. You're talking about a guy who relies on his athleticism, his speed in a lot of ways to be effective. A guy coming off a knee injury, I think that's there's reasons to be like, okay, well, I'm a little nervous about that. What was the injury he was dealing with last year, and how did he look coming back from it?
Can I tell you the truth, Steve? They had so many injuries. They had, if I were you, I would hope so, too. They had so many injuries last year that I cannot remember what injuries one guy had from one time to another. I do think he got hurt early. I think he got hurt in camp. And it wasn't something that sidelined him, so he was out there trying to practice, but it hampered him, didn't let him cut loose. And I think that there was a period of time that he just that needed to rehab and rest. And he's still effective in doing almost everything that he could do before, so I wouldn't be afraid to think of using him in any way.
You brought up Kellen Moore. Just curious, you know, his stint in Dallas, your thoughts on him and what he's going to be bringing to this Saints team.
Yeah, you know, a guy who is extremely knowledgeable, but I know how passionate Saints fans are. So I would implore Saints fans, when it comes to evaluating Kellen next year, to do what I think Dallas fans were not able to do with Mike McCarthy this past year, and that is, before you evaluate the head coach, you better make sure you have, as a fan and a reporter, before you evaluate the head coach, you better make sure you have correctly and fairly evaluated the players, because a head coach, no matter how brilliant, if he doesn't have the players, there's only so much you can scheme. And so I know that Kellen's offense was very effective, and I've known him since he came in here as a player, and right. he is an offensive, you'd hate to throw the word genius around too cavalierly, but there's not many people you'll find that can explain the passing game, especially better than Kellen. The part of the difficulty that he faces, I think, is the fact that, and I think New Orleans, the city of New Orleans, is a lot like Dallas in this regard. There are hundreds of thousands of offensive coordinators watching and listening to the game who know more about what they should be running than the coaches do. And the other thing is, and this amazes me, the longer I do this, the less I understand it. Fans seem to think that what happens from the time the ball was snapped is what the coaching staff sent in. Folks, if you don't know, there's like four options on every play, and usually it's the quarterback who decides what happens because he's the guy with the ball. And so if he doesn't see the look that the head coach saw or the play caller saw, in this case the same guy, if he doesn't see the same thing or he sees a different alternative than the head coach wanted, the blame, if it doesn't work, is going to, why did that knucklehead call that play? Well, guess what? He probably didn't. But that was what was available or what the quarterback saw. So what I'm saying is, when you evaluate Kellen, evaluate him first by deciding what kind of tools he was given. What kind of a team does he have? He's just as good a person as you could ever possibly want to meet, and he knows his football, and his team will be prepared.
Wise words from the voice of the Dallas Cowboys, Brad Sham. Thank you so much, man, for joining us today. Have a great weekend, Brad.
Thank you. You guys, too.
Thanks, Brad.
Brad Sham, voice of the Dallas Cowboys, joining us there. Didn't even get into. Was going to tell him, good luck with Peyton Turner.
Oh, yeah. Peyton Turner. He'll play that three guy. Games, I think. Three or four, maybe.
We are taking a break on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll do a little update on the NCAA tournament right after this on WWL. We're back wrapping up this hour of Sports Talk. Coming up, folks, at 6:30, LSU baseball at Texas. 7 o'clock first pitch on 105.3 FM. Meanwhile, over on 870 AM, Pelicans, Minnesota T-Wolves, 6:30 pregame, 7 p.m. tip-off. Like I said, the big 870 AM. Coming up back with more Sports Talk after the top of the hour news break, a short segment, and then we'll get into baseball and basketball action. We'll give you updates too when we get back on the NCAA basketball tournament. Stay tuned right here on WWL.